in a greedy little world that teaches every little boy and girl to earn as much as they can possibly, then turn around and spend it foolishly. We created us a credit card mess. We spend the money that we don't possess. Our religion is to go and blow it all. So it's shopping every Sunday at the mall. All we ever want is more. A lot more than we had before. So take me to the nearest store. Can you hear it ring? It makes you wanna sing. It's such a beautiful thing. Cause yeah, lots of diamond rings.
Hey everybody, good afternoon. We are back. This is James Martinez with Cashflow on December 3rd. As you well know, a special guest today is Bob Neverett. For those of you that are fans of Bob Neverett and they've been writing in, now is your chance. If you feel free, you would like to call and ask any questions regarding some of the information he's talking about, please feel free to do so at the following number, which is 888-235-7374. Again, it's 888-235-7374. It gives me a chance here before we bring Bob on to answer some of your questions that have been coming in. I've been getting email from Paris, France. Also, I've been getting mail from India, and I know some of you are suffering over there from major financial woes and so forth. So if you would email me your specifics on what's going on with you, it helps me before I call you in foreign countries and so forth and discuss what is going on, because as I mentioned here on this particular broadcast, I speak to everybody individually prior to them doing anything based upon their current situation. I deal with people that have big careers and big money and lots of business corporation stuff, and I deal with people that are students, everywhere in between, all walks of life, and everybody's decision-making process is a little bit different based upon where they're going and so forth. So always make sure that if you're going to email me at getdebtreliefnow@gmail.com, you can kind of give me a scenario of what's going on so I can best tune into your particular needs and what the best thing would do in the course of action to take. Okay, so with that out of the way, I'm happy to bring in Bob Neverett again. Good afternoon or good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, James.
How's it going?
Well, I had to move the last couple of days, so I have not had phone or internet access, so I don't know what's happening.
That's good.
I was thinking that I'd go to vague generalities.
What I wanted to do at the beginning of this is, because this kind of supports a lot of what you're saying, is I found this piece of Marshall McLuhan talking about the TV medium, and it's about a 3-minute piece, but I think if people heard it based upon a lot of stuff that you've said over the course of many weeks, it would help, and it'd give you a kind of guidance system for people to tune in and inquire on some different levels, because finally, after this amount of time that we've been talking about, that I'm starting my email correspondence from people all over the place has changed thanks to you, and they're starting to see the bigger picture, which is great after last week.
That's good. So go ahead, because I would just lapse into vague generalities.
Okay. All right. So let me play this, and then we'll proceed from there.
The audience participation is part of the TV medium.
But it isn't a participation that they have with other people, is
no,
it? I mean,
well, both.
It's possible that they have...
The nerve of TV goes right into the human nervous system. It goes right into the midriff.
Yeah.
The image pours right off that tube into the nerves. It's an inner trip. The TV viewer is stoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's addictive, like your show.
Yeah.
There's a strange expression, you know, you're taking me off, you're putting me on.
They both mean the same thing.
They both mean the same thing.
Yeah. How can they mean the same thing and be opposite?
Baudelaire put it in that famous phrase of his, hypocrite like Dermont son blanc mon frère. Hypocrite, the hypocrite is a man who wears a mask, puts on a mask. Mm-hmm. And Baudelaire said, the reader is putting on my poetry and I'm putting on the reader. Mm-hmm. And it's putting on and taking off. It's consuming and producing simultaneously. It's their reciprocal relationships. But it's fun and games. This is the important thing. It is a process in which you play. TV demands play, hence dialogue and interplay. It's not a solitary monologue medium, and that's why people with a merely private image have difficulty relating to it. But in putting on the public, which is a corporate act of play and participation, it's very difficult for a very well-defined private image to get with it. And it's a difficult thing to put on a public until you're prepared to play, as you are doing with your mask.
A mask.
You're putting on a mask, which is corporate and role-playing. It's not a private goal. You see, when you put on a mask, you're no longer seeking a private goal. It's if you put on a little masquerade mask like this, it means you're prepared to play fun and games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's corporate and festive. The goal was a superb TV image because he didn't have a private face. He just was a cartoon.
Okay.
A cartoon is tactile, and TV is not a visual medium. It is tactile. That's why whiskers are very good on TV. They're friendly to the sense of touch. Mr. Hurt's instrument with the resonant interval is profoundly good TV because TV is an audio tactile mode which demands that resonant interval, touch. So when I saw your fingers dancing up and down on that trumpet, I realized that you had a complete natural relation to the TV medium because of this interval of resonance, which is the TV form. TV is not a pictorial medium at all. It is a medium of audio tactile resonance.
Okay, Bob. Can
that
you hear
awesome.
Me? Okay. I wanted to bring that up because after talking to you last week and discussing with these things on air and off the air, I've noticed a trend with the TV and phone that I've never seen before in Los Angeles, and I always want to let you know of these things that I've noticed because it gives me and you kind of a gauge in which to see how behavior is being changed all over the place. And what I witnessed for the first time a couple days ago was someone using an iPhone as a transmitter of pictures rather than a phone call or a text. So I asked the guy, this particular guy, I said, "What are you taking pictures of?" And this was in Century City, California. And he said, "Well, I'm communicating with somebody, but I'm just doing it with pictures I take on my iPhone. They ask me where I am, and then I take a picture of it every minute, and then they try and come find me." So they take a picture of their location, then they send it via digital, the digital meme to the opposing person without putting a text, without any voice, and just a picture. And they keep sending pictures in a trail, like they're doing like cuts of a movie about their location. And that's how this guy communicates with this person. A whole different thing. I've never even seen that before. It's a whole different thing.
That is involvement in process. That's what McLuhan called it.
Mm-hmm.
Did he mention that in the tape? I think he did. He talked about the tactile interval.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes.
Okay, what's important is that's the key to understanding the derivatives economy. I will quote from a McLuhan article, an op-ed he did for the New York Times in 1974. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And he describes, this is called A Media Approach to Inflation, September 21st, 1974, an op-ed. He says, now this really does explain the difference from the past and the present. He said, "Until now, there have been many equilibrium theories of inflation. I am going to propose a disequilibrium theory based on the discontinuous nature of electric information of today." Remember how he was talking about the tactile, the nonlinear?
Yes. Right, right.
Okay, another word for that is discontinuous. He says, in the 18th century, Adam Smith got economics into orbit by linking the laws of the market to the automatism of the Newtonian universe. So the actual effect of the printed book on thinking in the sciences, say, from 1500 to 1700, led to the Newtonian universe of this mechanical clockmaker god. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That image?
Yes.
Is that god, you know, he wound up the universe and then it it unfolded like a clock. Now, the effect of that was a kind of psychological robotism, what he calls, McLuhan calls, automatism. So Adam Smith got economics going by saying, laissez-faire, let the invisible hand of the market robotically create the benefits overriding the disservices of that free trade kind of environment. All right? So McLuhan says, by this rhetorical device of linking Newtonian automatism to the markets, the laws of economics were given a rigor and lucidity that they did not then or now possess. Did not then or now. At least Adam Smith gave his theory some relevance to the then dominant science of astronomy. Now, I'm reading this partly because people think that when McLuhan said the medium is the message, that a medium, a book, a TV, affects your sensory life, you, so that you become a tactile person, or if you read books, you become a visual person. Actually, McLuhan's not talking about the affecting of your personal senses. People do not get affected in a communicable way by operations on their senses. Now, that's a controversial point because everybody assumes that brainwashing is what everybody's subject to. And think of brainwashing complementary to sensory washing. What McLuhan's saying, and this is why I call it vague generalities, he's saying that the new medium, the printed book or the movie or the radio, affects other media and the collective sense of people. Not the individual senses, the collective sense of what the crowd is. Now, that's a very tenuous proposition anyways.
Exactly.
Do you think that when you learned to speak as a child, that you had a sense that everybody else shared a space with through speech?
No. I don't even know how to answer that.
That's right. It's very difficult. I think it's 50-50. You had a sense that when you spoke, people could understand you. So for some reason, they could pick up what your mind was thinking, what the environment was impinging on you, and then you communicate it back. But you probably never thought, what is the effect of us all speaking at the same time or within the same community? What is that doing to us? And then we probably don't notice it until someone shows up who can't speak like us, speaks differently.
Right.
So in this nebulous area of group mind, not personal mind, and not group mind the way Carl Jung talked about the collective unconscious. I mean, we found that his images of the collective unconscious don't really match with the images in all kinds of different cultures. You could take very general images, like there's the wise man, the nutritious woman, this and that, the archetypes that Jung played with, but those are so vague, they're useless. And anthropologists found out that different tribes had different collective unconscious aspects. They had different belief systems. And it is the mystery of how they're different. Looking into that leads you to the material conditions around the person, the tribe, and how the characteristics of the material conditions of communication are the determinant in what the group mind thinks it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he's saying here, McLuhan's saying in this essay, that Adam Smith gave his economic theories relevance to the then dominant science of astronomy. So that economics and astronomy were disciplines, specialist disciplines, that were responding to a group mind. And in retrospect, the group mind was the effect of the printed book. So then
Very
McLuhan jumps forward. The effect of the printed book is not on our individual senses. It's on the group sense of what it is.
Right.
And that is, you can say that people never even had a sense of the group mind until the 20th century, when we started to see so many changes in the media that we started to see group mind,
mm-hmm.
group differences.
Right.
And instantly, through whatever news shows and imagery that are being presented. For example, what do we think of India now after Mumbai?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, what are our images of Bombay, which was Mumbai's original name. Okay, but so McLuhan jumps from the 18th century and Adam Smith to the electric age. He says, today, however, in the electric age, when the word makes the market, And the word is this collective effect of instant communication. Inflation theory still lumbers along on the wagon wheels of 19th century rhetoric. The Marxists say inflation can be cured with more production. Does that sound like Obama? Not sure. Well,
right.
While the Keynesians say it can be cured with more money applied at the right place and time, whereas all current inflation theories tend toward Newtonian rationality and balance, there is a huge disequilibrium factor of irrationality that results from information movement in simultaneous and instantaneous patterns. So simultaneous and instantaneous patterns is the group mind that Electric Age brought in. Now, people in 1974, when he wrote this, they were just beginning to get the effects of the oil crisis or the battle, the consequences of the, Israeli-Egyptian war in October 73. And people thought, well, you know, the oil price has gone up and there was a bit of a panic and started to go into stagflation. So there was something upsetting. Nowadays, to talk about disequilibrium factor of irrationality is obvious, and is the phrase that former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan used. Remember, irrational exuberance.
What was the phrase he used again?
He called the market, 10 years or so ago, he called it irrational exuberance.
Irrational exuberance, right. Yeah. I guess he knew something he didn't. He knew something that nobody else did, right?
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying that by 25 years after McLuhan wrote this, the disequilibrium factor was a little more obvious to people, but even then it wasn't, because everybody made fun of Greenspan's phrase, irrational exuberance. Mm-hmm. So this is the discontinuous nature of the electric economy, what he called the tactile space. And so he says here, the 20th century opened with Max Planck's theory of quantum mechanics in 1900, dating the discontinuity of the material universe. In the same year, Sigmund Freud published his Interpretation of Dreams, stating the discontinuities of our conscious and unconscious lives. So far as I'm aware, McLuhan says, economists have not yet matched physics and psychology with any statement of the discontinuity of the economic bond. All existing theories of inflation are hardware theories, nuts and bolts theories, theories of connected and continual rational processes of supply and demand. Now, you notice how McLuhan, he will look at what happens in physics, what happens in psychology, what happens in art. He looks across the culture.
Yeah, he
wants
does.
To figure out what's going on in economics. He looks at all the different specialist mind groups and what they're saying within their fields. And he's saying there's a hidden group effect caused by the new medium that shows a commonality underlying the different changes in science, art, and in economics.
Really? See, so he could look at every little group, whether it's the intellectual writing or science or whatever, and then find links between all of them because of the medium that was going on at that time?
Not necessarily links. The same pattern of at the turn of the century, 100 years ago, the discontinuity factor came in art, data, and surrealism, the playing down of visual perspective with impressionism. In science, Max Planck's theory of quantum mechanics, Freud's interpretation of the mind-body interplay, all of these things had the common pattern of discontinuity. Then when one understood that the electric environment is tactile and discontinuous, not linear like a book, and that was the common ground of everybody for the group mind, the group material conditions was movie, radio, and telephone, then he could say the characteristics of the electric environment are reflected in the little specialist disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, every day people turn on the radio, TV, the internet to find out what's going on. What's
right.
the group mind effect?
Right.
And they look at content. They see what the economists are saying. They look at this. And usually they summarize over the last 20 years, they go, well, it's chaos.
Right.
It's irrational. And they don't know that it's not irrational. It is the discontinuous nature of electric media and digital media. That's the thing. So we have a material cause for these impressions, and it's on the group mind, not on your individual life. Because you have a telephone, you maybe had a little bit of disruption, disruption going on in your life, but you didn't think that it was affecting your brain or your senses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, artists would look at how it's affecting the senses, but the artist would present, you know, puny little arts, painting, sculpture, music, theater, little art forms. None of it to the power of radio and movies when they came in.
Right,
they
of
were
course.
The actual new arts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now how does this apply to the derivatives market? McLuhan leads into that. Since he says all existing theories of inflation are hardware theories, he's saying we need a new theory of inflation. We need to bring in the disequilibrium model of economics. And that's why Marx and Keynes, the East and the West, don't work. He said the equilibrium theories of supply and demand concern the quantities of hardware, that's like production, as it were, whereas the disequilibrium realities occur at the speed of software. Software is the world of electrical information and also computer programming. It can, however, be understood to include the entire world of electronic service environments, not just software as what goes in code-wise into a computer. Think of radio, television, all the information media, the information highway, as part of software. So he says the term software can, however, be understood to include the entire world of electronic service environments that began with the telegraph and which include the telephone as well as television and satellite. All of these constitute a new service environment of electronic pulsation, which makes possible the dealing in futures, and he puts futures in quotes, and the anticipation of the gaps and intervals in supply and demand. Remember he was saying to Dick Cavett that it's in the gap, in the interval, the tactile
right.
interval where the action
right.
is. Okay, so economically,
right.
in the early 70s, this new idea of gambling with futures, and that's what the derivatives market was. We're not talking, we're beginning to get to the point where people buy and sell stuff that they neither give up or maintain, acquire. We talked about that last week, right?
Right, right, exactly.
But the first parts of it is people would gamble on the futures, whether something was going to go up or down in the market. So he says at electric speeds of information movement is precisely these intervals that invite the dealer in futures to gamble. So in the intervals where you gamble, instant information. Oh, remember in the article last week?
Yes.
The guy, the broker, would get the shares, 10 million shares, and he wouldn't have to deliver it to the buyer for 3 days. And he could gamble with it in that interval.
Right.
And part of the reason you could do that is the speed of communication allowed you to move that, because maybe, you know, 50 years ago, people didn't expect something they bought to show up for a week or two in paper certificate form or something.
Right, right.
And you couldn't gamble with it while it was in the mail. But once you have simultaneous electronic digital communication, it didn't matter whether the guy got the stuff within 2 or 3 days. You could make millions within 24 hours. In the gap.
In the gap, that's right.
And the gap is due to the simultaneity, the speed, the instant. If everything was instant, James, right now, and you were hearing everybody, you'd have to tunnel through it all and find a gap and maybe look for me and phone my number or something, right?
Right, right. I understand that, right.
You'd have to focus on one little thing, even though everything's going on at the same time. That's
right.
That's the environment in the second half of the 20th century.
And boy,
so he says,
what a number that is, because, look, I always am amazed about what's going on in L.A. culturally, what I see, but I don't think there's anybody, if you're walking in the street in Los Angeles, it is rare, very rare, to see somebody not interacting with the machines. In other words, everybody that's standing on their own or walking is on the phone or interacting with the machine, pretty much period across the board now.
Yeah, after the break, we'll talk about the disrupting of the communication environment has really become hyper in the last 10 years, and now it looks like it's affecting people's brains. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Yeah.
And I want to go into that.
I just saw a news story
here
that came out locally on the news saying, talking about the children in preschool, how they've noticed something. They didn't go too much in depth, but they were talking about how their learning environment with children from 0 to 10 is completely different. Like, they're different people now. They're all wired in like robots, and they were talking about how that's affecting their attention span and this whole thing. It's a whole thing. They don't really get into it too much, but when I watched it, I went, okay, there it is right there. That is the future right there, and it's going to keep going on and on and on and perhaps even get crazier than that already. I'm scared to see what it's going to be like for somebody that grows up in that environment wired in that much. But, okay, what we're going to do is take a quick break here. We'll be back with Bob Nevert in just a moment. If you feel free to call in if you have any questions, 888-235-7374. This is James Martinez with Cashflow. Special guest Bob Nevert, December 3rd, 2008. We'll be back right after this.
With a little girl in a Hollywood bungalow. Are you a lucky little lady in the city of life? Or did you know the lost angel, city of night, city of night, city of night, city of night, woo, come on!
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
Achieve Radio System, AchieveRadio.com. Hey, what's a .com in
James Martinez with Cashflow here, December 3rd. Before we get started with Bob again, I'm going to play another little monologue from McLuhan and what he says about electricity and drug use and how that is it's so prevalent today. I can just tell you from L.A., this is completely, totally a test of the times and exactly what's going on. So I'm going to play this little piece and we'll bring Bob on right after this.
Have you ever asked yourself why drugs have suddenly become popular when they weren't
say, 30 years ago?
I think it's because there's no future.
No. Inner tripping is natural in the electric age. All electricity is inner tripping. The electric age is inner trip, period. The progress literally stopped with electricity. Because you now have everything at once. You don't move on from one thing at a time to the next thing. You have everything. There's no more history. It's all here. It's all here, though. All the past. There isn't any part of the past that isn't with us, thanks to electricity. But now, it's not thanks to print. It's not thanks to photography. It's thanks to electricity. Speed. Huge speed up means there's no more past. Now, there is no more history. But you can turn on billion-dollar services for free in our world. And
under the condition that you watch the commercial.
No. You know, I have a flick-off. I never listen to it.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But, the commercials are... There's another... the commercials happen to be much better than the features artistically.
But people don't look at it in such a detached manner as perhaps you do.
I'm not sure it's detached. I'm more involved than detached. I mean, I study these things as art forms.
Yeah.
And other people argue that...
Let me give you an example of violence, then. If you study an ad as an art form, you're violating the ad. Because the ad is... The sad is not supposed to be seen. It's supposed to be a subconscious act.
Yeah.
And so if you deliberately pay attention to an ad, you're doing violence.
Instead of the point of view, when you're dealing with a total field, you can't have a fixed point of view. You can have a whole series of points of view, but you can't have a fixed point of view.
Information, data banks have become very big business. And they can store vast quantities of information that couldn't previously be put in filing cabinets.
Will computers dehumanize society or have they done it?
No, they will take away every vestige of private being that you possess and private human. That's already happened at very high speed.
You mean?
There you have it, right there, Bob.
Excellent stuff, James. How did you get that? On the internet?
Yeah, I got that on the internet because I've been wanting to, as I've been looking at this a little bit closer, because as I've been discussing these issues with you as they relate to finance, when I go out socially or I go to the bank or I go out, I watch people in a different way and how they're interacting, especially young people. And I happen to find some of these clips that are relevant to the stuff that we're talking about, and I decided I wanted to include them here as a kind of supportive evidence of what you're talking about.
Great. Now, I want to continue with the article, but just before we ended the last half hour talking about the disruptive, irrational appearing world of the kids and their instant messaging, if you understand McLuhan, we don't need to call it irrational or make a value judgment on it. I would agree that it is shocking for people to be interacting with a human being and the person is able to stop talking to you and go somewhere else and talk to someone you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
That's never happened before.
Right.
You know, and so that would appear to be disruptive. But why do people feel that they have to go immediately to somebody and interrupt their talk with James, you know, at a cafe or something, and talk to someone else? That's because for 30, 40 years before that, the insistent pressures of the simultaneity electric environment were already creating a sense of panic in people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the chip technology, the chip body, came in to sort of alleviate that pressure, supposedly. But actually, it caused a disservice of disruption of the social space for people.
Completely. I mean, since we've been talking right now in the last 30 seconds, I've got two texts and my phone is ringing at the same time. And it's just, what I'm seeing is like, what is why I talk about this is because for some reason in the last year or two, just from people that I talk to that are already under duress financially or whatever, they have a hard time even focusing on a conversation that may last 5 to 10 minutes, me one-on-one, because on the opposing end of the telephone call, they're getting texts or fax or whatever is happening right in the moment when I'm talking to him. So it's kind of like I'd love to be in a closed room with no stimulus anywhere, sit down, everybody take off all their text, fax, pagers, everything else, dump it all, and actually have a conversation with them and see how they'd react. Those days are over.
Okay. When you think of the telegraph, okay, take the idea of the broker, and today the broker is getting text messages and looking at the Dow and all this super communication, Bloomberg news and all that. Go back 150 years when the telegraph came in, which started to flood in information from all over the planet. That upset the markets. And the hidden effect was it created the emotion of multitude. Now, there is the group mind effect. It did not create the emotion of multitude in individual perceptual apparatus. It affected the sense of the group, which is largely semi-literate. And that made Marxism or socialism or the era of the working man become a proper response or a response to the emotion of multitude, which is what happens when you bring in the electric telegraph. Now, you're getting the emotion of multitude with all this text messaging, you know, quadrupled.
Oh, and then some, yeah.
Right. Now, think of the broker. He had to deal with computers and that in the 70s, and then all this digital apparatus came in. And so it led to this point where, as McLuhan says, instant information reveals a wide diversity of new patterns of change. People can start to see the change. And actually, change is a stopgap measure, an intellectual stopgap measure, because if everything's happening all at the same time, there's no change. Like McLuhan said, there's no history. There's no progress.
Right.
So you start looking for little minute patterns of change. Airsats or false patterns of change. And this is where the gambling on futures comes in. So if instant information reveals a wide diversity of new patterns of change, these entice everybody to anticipate changes to come. Now remember.
So you're saying that it puts the individual or group mind in the state of anticipation all the time.
Yeah, looking for progress, looking
right.
for movement. And the actual effect and effect of the tactile environment is there can be no movement, only interface and simultaneity. And to the degree you open yourself to interacting with a lot of things, that's the stress on you. How much do you open to?
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so he says, because you're looking for the artifact, the mental pattern of change, you start hoping there's change, and so he began to anticipate it. And McLuhan writes, ordinary people are thus inspired with the mania, which is born of perception of the interval, not the connection of the interval, between the now and the rapidly approaching new situation. This becomes a way of living, quote, as if every moment were your next.
Living as if every moment was your next.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And that's a phrase from James Joyce. I think it's from Ulysses, his novel. And he wrote that in the teens last century. Now, not his teens, the 1910s into the early 1920s. Since we're looking for any inkling of change and diminishing the pressure of simultaneity, which really leads to nothing. You can't visualize simultaneity. So we're looking for something to visualize, and we'll take any change as an indication of relief from the tactile simultaneity. And that's what the economy did. They started looking at potential changes, and they called them futures, and then tried to put a judgment on them in relation to other stocks and said they'll either go up or go down or interact.
Mm-hmm.
So he says the instant and simultaneous has no sequence. No linear history or projection of the future, nor any connections from one moment to the next, but are characterized, the instant sometimes, by resonant intervals and discontinuity. So in the new world environment of instant information, there is a need to pay attention to the neglected factor of the gap or interval as crux in creating inflation. So he's presenting why inflation is created. Inflation is the filling in, the hope for change.
Mm.
And now this basic fact of what he calls the tactile, applies to everything he wrote. It's the same formula he applied to every change in the arts, sciences, and sports, and military actions. Like he said, in a decentralized situation, you can't have a world war. You can only have little civil wars in backyards of the world, like Korea or Vietnam or Iraq.
Right. That's right.
The real war is the simultaneous effect on the group mind, and the group mind is a material condition based on previous forms of thinking and having a sense of how large the community was. And that was, for 400 years, the Gutenberg linear print effect. When you bring in the simultaneous effect, all the disruptions of the last 120 years, 150 years, are understandable if you just understand it's a new electric environment, a new medium that affects the sense of the crowd.
Right, right.
And that's a different... in other words, the CIA looked into the Chinese and Russian brainwashing in the 50s. They wanted to see how they said, how does the brainwashing they did to prisoners of war during the Korean War, how does that affect the individual mind? And can we exploit that? Can we adapt it to our own population, what became known as MKUltra?
Right.
And everybody was looking at brainwashing affecting the individual brain and the senses of the body. They didn't know that the brainwashing was happening in this nebulous area of the group mind. The brainwashing was happening in the nebulous area of the group mind as expressed in the habits that came from previous media communication. Now, that is, if you can understand that, then you've got genius in relation to everybody else.
Okay, let's understand that, everybody. Let rephrase that, because I'm listening real closely on what you mentioned there. So you're saying when the agency came in to study the Chinese, they wanted to see what the group mind of that environment, the Chinese culture, what that effect was, as well as the effect on the individual person that they were doing it to, correct? Or is that off?
No, that's a bit off. That's what the secret intelligence agencies were starting to study, what McLuhan was studying.
Right.
What I meant is that the CIA studied the ability to brainwash individuals. That's why they brought in LSD, to see if that could be a truth serum.
Right.
Okay, so you're brainwashing or trying to release the mind of individuals. That is not what... And while they were doing that, they found that LSD didn't work. They did all kinds of other things. None of it worked in terms of controlling the population in the 60s. The population became a bunch of anarchists on so many levels, socially, sexually, politically, economically, culturally, and musically, recreationally in the 60s and 70s, and it could not be controlled in the way Big Brother imagined. In George Orwell's novel, it could be controlled. And the reason it could be controlled is that a whole new decentralizing effect of satellites, computers, and TV altered the radio vision of control. That's what they were looking at, the CIA, in the 50s. They still had a radio view of the crowd. And so, therefore, all kinds of wacky things happened in the 70s, 80s, and the intelligence agencies to figure out how to control people. Basically, they realized, well, like McLuhan said to Dick Cavett, they're going to be all addicted to this new stuff. It's temporarily making them crazy. They're getting inspired with new revolutionary ideas, but those ideas will pale compared to the fact that they're going to keep watching it on TV. And so they're addicted to television, so no cultural brainwashing was necessary anymore. They didn't even need to brainwash individuals because people were, quote, addicted to the media. And that
emptied
out
social
space.
They could just do it through the media.
Well, they realized the group mind. They realized what McLuhan was saying, that the group mind controls people. And the group mind happens through the new medium, which was television. And it's all through the culture over the last 30 years. Everybody sees everybody else as a bunch of zombies, right?
Right.
It takes so genius to see that. I mean, kids saw it in punk music. They talked about everybody being zombies. They purposely put on the zombie attitude with their group band names.
Yes, they did.
Okay. Now, the digital environment creates a different kind of group mind, which we've been describing since July, but I don't want to go into that. I don't want to repeat that. We're coming at always the same insight, the same pattern, through different ways. So we're talking about how McLuhan described the effect of the computerized satellite environment on economics. Just before the digital environment comes in, it's sneaking up on people, but he is actually talking with his emphasis on futures, on what's going to be called derivatives later.
Right, right.
And so he says, as long as there's an interval of play, he's going to try to further describe this tactile interval. As long as there's an interval of play between the wheel and the axle, there is a rotary action. It is the interval of play that keeps the wheel and axle in touch. So if you have the wheel and axle actually really stay in touch, they seize up and the car stops.
Right.
There has to be this gap of interplay between the wheel and the axle, an emptiness. You can see in physics, they're now saying that the universe is made up of dark energy, dark matter. They're just tuning into the gap inside matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Inside the old Newtonian view of connected matter. Like when you look at, take a chemistry course, you see the little molecules and they have little lines joining the carbon and the hydrogen
right.
molecules, right?
Right? That's the interplay gap?
Well, that is the old Newtonian version of the gap. They think the two molecules are connected. Mm-hmm. They're not connected. They're rubbing against each other. And it was Linus Pauling, the Nobel Peace Prize and Science Prize winner. He, in 1939, pointed out that the bond in chemistry now is not the connection, but the resonant interval. Now, they never taught you that in school, did they?
Oh, absolutely not.
And so McLuhan always appreciated Linus Pauling at least speaking up on the science world of what the change was that was coming in the new quantum mechanics. So remember, McLuhan is kind of applying quantum mechanics, not Newtonian mechanics, to the economy. Like Adam Smith applied Newtonian mechanics to the economic scene and created rationality and balance, supply and demand. But that's not the case when you have software. So McLuhan says this interval of play between the wheel and axle, the gap or interval is, quote, where the action is. This fact has gained special attention from the new physics, and it is in the very opening of The Nature of the Chemical Bond, a book by Linus Pauling, that he explains there are no connections in matter. The development of the theory of quantum mechanics has also introduced into chemical theory a new concept, that of resonance, and it is our resonant interval. So what Pauling is the scientist who kind of popularizes the idea of resonance. So this was not taught to you in school in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Then McLuhan says, what is most relevant here to the nature of inflation may perhaps be seen from the way in which the gap or interval in things creates the mentality of the gambler. And he quotes a poem. The gambler either fears his fate too much, think of the idea that there's end times in religion,
right,
or his deserts are small. In other words, I'm not getting enough for what I'm doing. McLuhan's principle is the crowd, as it gets more enhanced by electric media, begins to think it's smaller. It's paranoid.
Right, paranoid, right.
Right, so the gambler fears his fate too much, or his deserts are small. He fears to put it to the touch, to win or lose it all. He actually gets in a panic state and says, well, it's really coming down, so I'm going to gamble it all. He fears to put it to the touch. It's like complimentary. He's panicked. He's afraid, but he's going to do it. He's going to put it all, to win or lose.
So, my God. Ah, I see where you're going with this. Okay.
Right. So he says, continuing, he says, it is precisely touch that is the resonating world of the gap or interval. Touch is literally created by a resonant interval between, say, the hand and the thing. When you touch something, you've got to be able to let go and then touch it again. If there were any connection between the hand and the thing, there would be no hand. The gambler is, above all, the man who must stay in touch. Now, think of everybody looking at their digital cell phone, their iPhone, or watching the news media. The news junkies is called.
Right.
They're trying to find if there's an indication of change. They're not conservatives. They're not hoping there's no change. They hope there's an indication of change so that we can get past this simultaneous blankout, blur, wipeout. The gambler is, above all, the man who must stay in touch. And in the new physics of the instantaneous electric environment, it is precisely the resonant interval or touch that characterizes the information that constitutes the universal accessibility of instant information. Again, he's repeating the simultaneous factor. So he says, for the dominant environment of our age has itself become information or software. Not money. It's become information, talking, yakking, typing, monitoring, everything of electric media. tends to become a ground. That means looks like it's the anchor for me to get an identity from. And anything, however trivial, can acquire infinite mass. That's obvious people today. Any little story about any celebrity acquires infinite mass. You right. used to talk about the model who didn't want to get paid in dollars, wanted to get paid in euros, and that went global, that story.
Oh, that, yeah, that Victoria's Secret model, Giselle, that's right.
Right, and she became temporarily a ground, only for 24 hours, a ground
right.
meaning everybody's looking at it.
That's right, that's right.
Okay, so the figure acquires infinite mass. The temptation and the desire to gamble with everything and anything becomes obsessive as a result of that. When anything can become ground, you're going to gamble with anything. $1, now here's the only real explanation of inflation. $1 at the speed of light can do as many transactions as $1 million back before electricity at pre-electric speeds. Quantitative projections and rational critiques cannot cope here when $1 can do as much, do millions of operations. So this leads to this group mind effect. In the new electric environment, almost any situation has a structure eligible for gambling. Anything. Much as Lloyd's of London was prepared to insure any part of the body, the butts, the legs, or even states of mind and popularity, against the whims of chance. And the whims of chance are people reacting and looking for any kind of change inside the Niagara Falls of simultaneity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Using the language of Gestalt psychology, which came up with the terms figure and ground, it could be said that inflation makes everything a figure against the ground of public interest, against the ground of attention. Who's paying attention to what? And so you gamble on what's going to be the next obsessive fad. Figure and ground
right.
constitute what?
That's right.
Yep. So figure and ground constitute the structure of most situations, and they are in perpetual interface of flux. However, in the pulsating world of the intervals in electric information, there are innumerable opportunities to seize and abstract the interval itself as a new kind of object to be exploited. So the derivatives came in just as the digital technology came in, and the old electronic tactile gap became the content. Like Enron playing with the electronic utilities of California, the tactile gap became the content of the digital medium. And so people started to gamble with these little gaps, and that led to digital, to the derivatives. Yet, as we said last week, they were not doing anything in the old paper certificate sense of supply and demand. They did not give up anything to the buyer, and the buyer didn't receive anything, even though they could take the gap and claim they got 10 million shares for 5 years.
Right. Yeah. That is monumental. I think it's, if people understood it and they go back and listen to the archives, that's major, major, major news.
Yeah. So he talks about, now, this is 1974. Everybody's worrying about oil, but McLuhan is looking at the software environment. He's saying, there are days when large bodies of corporate funds are not in use, and the idea readily occurs, quote, why not make these funds electrically available for a few hours to some other part of the world? Unquote.
Right.
He says, McLuhan says, it was perhaps the dawning awareness of the utility of the interval that prompted the phrase, quote, time is money.
Mm, that's right.
At electric speeds, however, a very little time can become a very great deal of money. You just have a couple days, you can make a million, let's say, back then.
Wow.
Information makes everything a figure for the public, even as the figure obscures the ground. The figure, the simultaneity of Britney Spears everywhere, obscures the fact it's all simultaneous. You look at the anthropomorphic content, the human content. You miss
okay,
the technical
on that
monster.
Note, Bob.
What?
This one, I'm. Everybody, please listen to this archive again because we covered some pretty intense stuff here. And we're just almost out of time. Bob, thank you for that. I'll be following up with you shortly. Everybody else, we'll see you tomorrow. James Martinez with Cashflow. Take all this information we talk about, process it, re-listen to it over and over again. If you have questions, better feel free to email me. I'll see you to it that Bob can respond. Thank you, everybody. This is James Martinez with Cashflow. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cash Flow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.